J.R. Harding will be with me in the second hour talking about the Americans with Disabilities Act. Then from our archives, Ernest Farrell, the Reverend Farrell, who was celebrated for so many years as the head of the local Urban League. We're going to talk with those who are in the business of advocating for others. You stay with me.
Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, brought to you by Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first name in glass for your home or office, and by Merry Maids. Call Merry Maids. Relax, and it's done.
In 1945, Jack Widen started a glass company in Tallahassee. Now, over 70 years and three generations later, it's still working every day, doing just as Jack wanted, giving his customers real solutions for replacing window glass, providing custom cut mirrors, and supplying superior bath and shower enclosures. Local building contractors know Widen Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. They prefer Widen because of their precision and mastery of eye-catching storefront glass and countertop glass. It's a fact. When you choose Widen Glass, you're working with real glass people who will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. It's what Jack Widen wanted, and it's been the Widen way of doing business for over 70 years. Widen Glass, Tallahassee's first family in glass since 1945. Call Widen Glass today or visit them online, 850-222-5781 or widenglass.com.
So good to be back with you on this occasion when we are at the time of year celebrating light and joy for all of us, not just those who are among certain communities of faith, we'll say, but the world's joys are celebrated best, I think, at this time of year when, as we reflect upon what is before us. Interesting that we come through the Thanksgiving season, a national holiday, an American holiday, and it is with great reverence, I think, would be appropriate, or certainly great appreciation for what the country has endured and what the country has provided. You know, as a nation, this country has liberated and advocated on behalf of those who were otherwise oppressed or downtrodden. The amounts of blood, sweat, and tears that have been poured out for nations and peoples around the world in our history. And those acts of kindness that continue, the charity that is characteristic of the American landscape, the way in which local charities that we love so much, like Christmas Connection, this time of year we especially think of an organization of people who volunteer their time to bring the joy of Christmas a little closer. And as all the reports are indicating this year, my friend, it's not pretty. It's even more dire for a lot of these families that Christmas Connection will care for. And probably the best news of all is that that care extends well beyond the Christmas season. Throughout the year, these are families that are brought aid and comfort and support and assistance in so many ways through the works of those social workers who are part of the whole Catholic Charities, Catholic Social Services programs. It's formidable, and it's a great reminder of the kind of charity that we enjoy as a nation and that we give out as much as we can. And so you'll hear me talking with you the next several weeks about the work that Christmas Connection is doing. And I thought it appropriate that we would take the same opportunity to bring to you from our archives In celebration of our 10-year anniversary of broadcasting, this show has been at it for these 10 years with people like J.R. Harding, who has been a stalwart advocate on behalf of those Americans with disabilities. And at the time of this particular conversation, you're going to hear it in the second hour of the show, we were then talking about the anniversary of, I think it was the 26th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which was a monumental step forward. So all of those places that you see where disabled ramps are installed and required, where sidewalks are made with special provisions for those who are using a wheelchair or other device, those parking spaces that are reserved for those with disabilities. All of that came about along with all kinds of other provisions, even more significant perhaps economically, in relation to employment and housing. And I mean, the list is formidable. And Mr. Harding was instrumental in all of that. He was and remains a strong advocate for the rights of, the needs of those who are disabled. So we're going to have an opportunity to talk with him at length in the second hour. We will have in the coming up here, just in another segment or so, Reverend Ernest Farrell, who for 48 years of service with the Urban League, established his role clearly as an advocate for those engaged in the civil rights efforts. 26 years he was pastor at St. Mary's Primitive Baptist Church, and then 48 years of service with the Urban League. It's astounding. Here back in 2018, he retired officially, although I guess that just means that he changed his email address more likely, because this is an individual like so many people like Reverend Farrell who just don't know any quit. They just don't know. There is no retirement. But it's noteworthy that he contributed not only to the welfare of the Urban League and its formation and its strengthening over those many, many years. He at the same time encouraged and inspired a league of people who joined up in those efforts or who applied themselves in other similar efforts to bring a sense of advocacy, to bring education, enlightenment, to affirm all of us. You know, when the least among us or the most overlooked or even oppressed are lifted up, oh, that lifts us all. That is, in fact, the whole notion of us as a nation, as we have, celebrating Thanksgiving for all the good that has been brought to us. But at the same moment, it's that opportunity for us to extend that, isn't it? You know, and it's well beyond paying it forward. I'm not very fond of that phrase, because that implies a kind of quid pro quo, right? And I think that the charity, true charity, real love, has nothing to do with the quid or the quo. It really has a lot to do with, or it's founded in, better said, founded in a kind of abandonment, a determination to do what I must, what any of us must do to bring good to any given situation, to a person or to a group of people or to a set of ideas. And I just think about that for a moment. The founding of our nation, yeah, among a group of radicals, people who knew at the outset of their determination that they were putting their lives and the lives of their families at risk. Yeah, we're talking about people who said, no matter what it takes, even death itself will not stop us from our resolve to establish a way of living, a culture, a society based in documents that affirm the rights and needs and privileges that we are then granted under the Constitution. So there you are, my friend. We have living examples of people among us, Ernest Farrell, J.R. Harding, who are at that work, have been at it for some time, who inspire all of us then to give our very best, regardless of the cost. Without looking back one moment, we look forward to our determined outcome.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Super Signs. We were gonna do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just gonna tell you, Super Signs is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it, lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Super Signs. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Super Signs does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs too. So for your business or your birthday party, Super Signs is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Super Signs is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Hi, I'm Melissa Bruner, and you're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back, Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny, on this December weekend when we are at the brink of all kinds of celebration going on through the month, in conjunction with Christmas and other holidays abound. And with that, we're pleased that we can tell you more about Christmas Connection. You know that Tallahassee Family Magazine, Moose Magnificat Radio, this broadcast, Tallahassee Talks, along with a host of local businesses, Wood and Glass, Truck and Car Concepts, Sellers of Tallahassee. It is an annual effort we've been making now for 20 years. With this in mind, that typically, maybe some would say appropriately, charities put all of their resources to the meeting of needs, those needs of the individuals and families and such that they are intent upon serving. Well, so it happens that when charities are in need of more promotion, we'll say, generally speaking, well, where does that come from? So many years ago, we gathered together a few business owners locally. Truck and Car Concepts was among them, the very first. And we decided that we would take it upon ourselves to use our resources, marketing and advertising and creative services and all of the business of running an ad campaign and tell the world, or at least tell the greater Tallahassee area, this is what we're doing. We're wanting everybody to help Christmas Connection. And you can help in so many ways that are even more, if you want to say, convenient or efficient or immediate. Now, there are many, and we had Lisa Harvey with us last week, talking about those who have committed themselves to serving as volunteers. One individual she referred to, you may remember, actually moved away from the Tallahassee area, but in his days living in Tallahassee was a regular. He was part of the Christmas Connection volunteer staff for a couple of decades. I mean, they've been doing this for over 40 years. You realize that? Well, so it happens that even though he no longer lives in Tallahassee, he's made his way back here during the Christmas season or during the next couple of weeks here when Christmas Connection will be doing its very best to reach out and to care for over 500 families, and that tops out at somewhere between 2,000 and 3,000 individuals. And these are folks who are in the most dire of circumstance. I mean, they're not just, missing a paycheck here or there. Lisa made the point, and I think it's worth repeating. One of the biggest requests among these families, the need for cookware. You know, we always think about food and toys and clothing, and those are good things to consider because all of those needs remain. But they're asking for cookware. I won't go for the obvious there and, you know, not having a pot to cook in. But that's the status. And so what we end up doing is reminding all of us to give generously and to look for those novel ways in which you can give. For this particular year, first time they've done this, there are sponsorship levels. You can come in and pledge a certain dollar amount. And that simply amounts to a sponsorship of their efforts. And you'll see these available. If you go to their website, thechristmasconnection.org, you can actually go online that way and fill out the sponsorship application. You can either do cash or you can do in-kind. And they have them set up there at $2,500 and $1,000 and $500 level. That's pretty cool. Then, of course, something they started last year, maybe the year before last, the Amazon wish list has been established. You go to your Amazon account and go to Christmas Connection. Wow, and here's the wish list. So you go in and you just purchase those items directly from Amazon, and they're shipped directly to the Christmas Connection headquarters location. That's pretty cool. And so now anything you decide to do is always a good thing. They're asking us to get it together and certainly no later than the 15th of the month that we've made our contributions, our donations. Gift cards are good, children's toys and books, bikes and helmets, absolutely. Don't forget teenagers. So any kind of gift for a teenager is always welcome. Baby gift items, and then blankets, towels. I mentioned cookware, any housewares. And yes, non-perishable food. It's all going to go to the right place. I tell you what, the accountability is remarkable. And it's one of the reasons why so many years ago I decided, hey, I want to be involved in this way. But I want to be able to contribute to an organization that I know is going to make the best use of whatever is donated. And there is that level of constancy, ongoing care that extends well beyond the Christmas season. It is, at the same time, highly professional and efficient and accountable. So you and I can know that for sure the things we've done to contribute to the welfare of others, yeah, it's happening. You also have the option of adopting a family. You fill out the adoption request form, again, at their website. And once again, that's thechristmasconnection.org. You'll find families in need, and they'll provide you then with a Christmas wish list for that family. And that's a good thing for your family or your business or your club to participate in. Yeah, really, really cool stuff. I should mention, too, they have their location set up, and it's especially convenient. It's always a challenge for them because they wait on those who are capable of providing a donated space, right? Well, let's see here. Have I got that location handy for you? Yeah, here it is, 2990 Appalachie Parkway. That's right at the corner of Capitol Circle, Southeast and the Parkway. In fact, if you are familiar with where Leon County Supervisor of Elections office is located, it's in that same complex there. Very familiar. And a fantastic opportunity for all of us because of the amount of space available to Christmas Connection at that location. Again, it's 2990 Appalachie Parkway here in Tallahassee. Folks, it is our pleasure and it's our privilege to be able to bring you this kind of news. After all, when we think about what Christmas really means, it is this gift of life to the world, to the universe, that God became human on our behalf and said, hey, you know what? I just want to be with you. I want to be one with you. And that, my friend, is Christmas.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers Spacious Showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
More beauty, less bully. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny here on the beautiful part of the sunny side of Saturday. We hope you're having a great morning. Thanks for being with us. We have in studio Reverend Ernest Farrell. He is a pastor at St. Mary Primitive Baptist Church here in Tallahassee and the president, CEO of Tallahassee Urban League. How are you, sir?
Good to be here.
Do you think Tallahassee is good to its citizens at large? Is this a good place to live?
Well, I'm not an immigrant. I've been here since I was born here 71 years ago, so I don't come from that perspective.
But look a day over 70. I want to tell you that right now.
Well, you said the nicest thing. That's because I'm sitting right here in front of you. But Tallahassee has grown to be an interesting and a unique place to live. And I've seen it grow from one degree to the next. And so I think it's when you stay over 6 months, it's hard to leave. And most of the people who come to Tallahassee are still around, even though we have issues like most communities do.
Yeah.
But I think we have managed over the years to address them and to move forward for the most part.
Let's get at that in terms of the mission and the vision for Tallahassee Urban League. For those of us like me who are less informed, what is that? What is it that the Tallahassee Urban League is trying to do?
Well, as less informed as many Tallahasseans are, when I first heard about the Urban League, I thought it was a baseball team. So I don't feel.
So I shouldn't feel too bad. Okay.
But I've learned a lot different since then. It's become a passion for my life because of what it does and because of the impact that it has had really on Tallahassee over these. Started in 1969, and it has grown. For the agencies such as ours, with as predominantly black for the most part, that have sustained and lived for those years, it's really almost phenomenal because that just does not happen, unfortunately. But yeah, Tallahassee has been a great place to live. Tallahassee has been my home for all these years.
Yeah.
And I've seen it move from one degree to the other.
Your roots run pretty deep then as a native. And with that, when you look back through the history of your own family, what is most noticeable to you?
Well, my father was a body man, I call him. They called him a person who really fixed cars and when they damaged, and he worked for this white business, and they became friends. And so his family, which was my family, of course, we had a large family in the community. And even though we may have not been where we thought we ought to be, we were a lot further ahead than a lot of people were because we worked together. We were a family in the community, in the neighborhood, when the people in the community didn't have. And we all was able to share. And it was always like that in our communities, that the people who did not, their food may have run out, and ours didn't, we knew that we could share. There was a person in our community who grew watermelons and who grew peas and all the other kind of vegetables. He was a farmer, and he made sure that those things were available to those who did not have. So I've seen that part of the community in my own family grow. Yeah. And when my father died when I was 10, of course, my mom, who was not who was the person who really took care of the house, was not familiar with all the other things that my father did. He did most of everything. And when he died, of course, then she was the father and the mother in the house. And that was an awesome task on her part.
And how did you, as a family, how did you survive financially without his income coming? I mean, what else happened
then? Well, when my father died, Social Security was a major part of our income because my mother did not work at the time. And all of us were young enough to be able to have income coming in that area. But, of course, that was not enough. My mom had 9 children. Mm-hmm. But they were my bigger, older brother, who was old enough to become the father figure in the house. But he had nephews were the same age as I was. Well, not the same age as I was, but they were all having children almost at the same time. So that was a household with my father's siblings. Wow. And my father's siblings. so it was quite interesting in the household. But we managed, we made it. We were very active. People thought we had more than we did, but we were very fortunate to have had a father who really provided for us. We had land that he purchased when he was a man who would think that was not the case many times back in those years. You know, we had a lot of our family members had, not of our family, but black people in particular had a lot of land because at that time they did not consider it to be as valuable as it began to be. And then a lot of people want their land back. But we still have it, thank God, that we were able to have the amount that we did have. And my father, when he died, he divided it up to his brothers and some of his brothers. So that went pretty good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is that the way it works for black families now, do you think? Is it that sort of security in the land and in the connections that they have as families with one another? Has that changed?
That has changed in what seemed like a large portion, but it's still true in a lot of families. But for the most part, things have changed dramatically. And, you know, there's a difference between my generation and the generation that's here today, and it's really makes you really concerned.
How is it different?
Different because the value of an education is not as significant now as it was then. I mean, my father and my mother wanted to make sure that we got an education, even though they did not have one particularly. Mm-hmm. And they did everything they could to make sure that we stayed in school. And when we had an issue in school, once it got back to the household, you didn't want it to get back because you're going to get punished for it as well when it came back home that you messed up in school.
Yeah.
And so it was critically important that you got an education, that you learn, and they did not want you to have to repeat some of the things that they had to go through in order to get you to where you were or where you are today. So those things were significant then. It's not as significant now, and that's something we got to really work to get back in this new generation.
In fact, then, with access to those kinds of resources, do you feel like the black community in Tallahassee is able to take advantage of things like the least of which I suppose might be referred to as the internet, you know, or web-based opportunities, some of the innovation that's going on there. What's your sense of that?
Well, it seems to me that the internet and high tech and all these things, everywhere I turn, now everybody got a cell phone.
Yeah.
Everybody's on the internet. Everybody's got all of the things that the social media provides.
Right.
And I'm not sure they're taking advantage of it in a positive way always. But I think that it's certainly available. It may not be as wide available in some communities as we think it should. Computers are not in every household. And that's nowadays, and unfortunately, I'm not as computer literate like I want to be. But for everybody around me, if I want something done, I just call it a child, especially when it relates to the same. I got a smartphone that's a lot smarter than I am.
Yeah,
okay?
I relate to that. Yeah, I have very smart children who I'm nice to them.
All you got to do is call them. I don't know if you can really do anything on your TV to keep kids from watching. You got to ask them how to do it. So.
Yeah, what's the whole thing with parental block? Are you crazy?
So you can't block. You got to get them to show you how to block it. So, you know, those are the kind of things that are different. Even in spite of the fact that opportunities is available, sometimes I think we're not taking advantage of it as we probably should.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that Tallahassee, as a community, we'll say, perhaps even as a municipality, county, city, do you see initiation there? Do you see an opportunity being offered from that corporate level of activity where we see the city of Tallahassee reaching out to the black community and saying, here are ways in which you can make these innovative solutions part of your everyday life?
Well, right now, our office is located in Frenchtown. We've been there since it started in 1969. Hmm. There are a lot of innovative issues in this community that has changed. For example, in Tallahassee, Gaines Street, Commerce now, they have made that a major hub in the Tallahassee area. Why Frenchtown is going dominant because that has not happened there, and I think it should have because the resources are available, but there has not been an asserted effort, I think, to make Carl Street or Old Bainbridge Road or Brevard Street or Virginia Street or Carolina Street or Georgia Street. That same kind of emphasis ought to be placed in those areas that have a history.
Yeah.
I mean, Frenchtown have a major history in this community. That was the economic hub for the black community.
Yeah,
and it's not so anymore, and I think that's one of the things that we're working on.
Talking with Reverend Ernest Farrell, he is the president and CEO of Tallahassee Urban League and the pastor at St. Mary Primitive Baptist Church. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Now we're really talking. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Talking with Reverend Ernest Farrell, President and CEO of the Tallahassee Urban League. We're talking about the manner in which Tallahassee has changed, and here as a youngster growing up in Tallahassee and now, hard to believe, but 71 years of age and still going strong and still trying to make a difference. What difference does the Tallahassee Urban League try to make in the lives of not just African-American folks, but about Tallahassee?
Well, the Urban League, as I said earlier, has been here since 1969. And, and we got started from an article that was printed by the Evelyn magazine some time ago about how blood pressure was killing black people, particularly high blood pressure was a major issue in the black community. It still is because it was called a silent killer. And from that article and a newly developed agency called the Tallahassee Urban League, we began to address those issues by starting a community health carnival. And you mentioned something about someone who has started something that resembles that. Those health carnivals, it took very little resources. We went directly in the community with a carnival-type atmosphere, brought in professionals from Florida A&M University and others to come in, the doctors, people who could come at a minimum cost, do basic stuff like blood pressure check, like checking your eyes or find out whether or not you're anemic or some of the things that you can do with less funds. It was very interesting because I remember that the doctor told me to show, be an example, they're going to prick my finger, but they really wasn't going to do it, right? And so I was going to be the example so all the kids could watch me, and they all gathered around because they told me they was not going to prick my finger. I was all right with it, so I had them when they put my finger down there, and they pricked it, and I was not prepared for that. And I was not a very good example for the rest of them to follow. But that health carnival got us started, and we were able to get a grant from the Florida Department of Health to do blood pressure screening, to do testings, things that were going undone in the black community particularly.
So from the outset, the focus was on how to bring to the black community as such the kinds of resources that they didn't have access to otherwise?
It was not available because it was not an issue. Okay, and once we got that started, When I graduated from Florida A&M University, I was a research assistant, and they sent me to Havana and Quincy.
I see.
And those are the places that really made me really understand and appreciate the fact that I was not as bad off as I thought I was, because there were a lot of sick people, there were a lot of issues in those communities that we had to identify and record and show people that things are really tough. And I ended up becoming so compassionate with this stuff that I was taking back the teen and stuff that I could take, that the basic stuff, people who had sores and stuff that I could really deal with.
Right.
It became a part of me, and I wanted to be a part of making a difference. And that's how we really coined the "We're Making a Difference" thing that people hear all over this town that we do.
We talk a lot about the black community, the white community. Why do we have a black community and a white community? Why don't we just have one community?
Well, that sounds naive and also almost unrealistic in the time that we live in. It would be nice, I think, when we get to heaven, maybe that'll be that way. Uh-huh. But unfortunately, we're not there yet. And I think that there's going to be...
Why? Why are we not that way?
It's because history has proven that there is a separate. People like to be with the people who look like them. Unfortunately, but that doesn't mean there have to be a separation of our schools. That doesn't mean there have to be a separation even of our churches. But it is. I mean, why is a good question. I don't have a good answer for why, other than the fact that it happens. We have to adapt to it. We have to make the changes that make sure that people who are in these different situations, that they have equal opportunity no matter where they are, equal access. No matter who they are, what neighborhood they're in, that's the problem that we can make change in. We can make that happen when we can't. We may not put all of us together where we all hunkadory, but at the same time, we certainly can make the opportunity available so that everybody would have equal access.
So not being the same is okay, but having equal opportunity is the
There's
key.
Diversity is a wonderful thing. That's why God made us differently. Hmm. You know, if he was all, if everybody act like I act, if everybody was an Ernest Farrell, this world would be pretty boring, I'm sure, as a matter of time. But because God created us and gave all of us different personalities, different DNA, different fingerprints, and all these things, but that was not done in order to separate us. It was done in order to make us appreciate the fact that we are different, but yet we all put on our clothes together. We all do some of the basic things the same, I think.
One leg at a time, they say. Interestingly, about a week ago, this research from Richard, Florida was released entitled Segregated City, and in the subtitle, The Geography of Economic Segregation in America's Metros. It was decried by local Chamber of Commerce officials and some other folks that begin to say, well, the research is flawed. I've read through the research, and my background as a social scientist tells me that the research was sound. But in that research, we find that Tallahassee is listed as the number one community of its size. And now this is the metro, which is based in the census data, right, for Leon, McCullough, Jefferson, Gadsden County, identifying the segregation, the separation of these communities that we're talking about, in particular, those who have relatively more income and those who have less income. It does tend to run along racial lines, but not entirely. So while you're saying, well, it's okay to be different, the question remains, in that difference, these folks that are segregated from one another, are they appreciating those differences? Do they have an opportunity to learn from one another?
The report that you're relating to, which identifies Tallahassee as number one in an area that we certainly don't want to be number one in. But the fact and the reality of it is that based on the information that's available, it seems as if it's true. So what are we going to do about it? How are we going to make the difference? How are we going to make diversity a positive thing rather than a negative thing? In Tallahassee, and I think that once we focus on how we can make the difference and how we can make the change rather than the fact that it has been identified. When you pull the cover off of anything, you know, it's always...
Yeah.
Sure. It doesn't go down well, especially with the people who have the economic change, the chambers in our community. They're not going to like that. Right. They're not going to appreciate
that. Right.
But I think they ought to get equally as serious about doing something about it.
Right. Rather than just saying, hey,
it's
all
flawed. Flawed or anything. Yeah. You know, find out if it's true. Statistics pretty
well,
much.
And you made this point. I mean, you see all of this investment in the Gain Street area and the prior president at Florida State talking about the Madison Mile and all of that investment.
That's all right.
What about the south end of town? What about the other side of the railroad tracks? What about Frenchtown? Why aren't these locations as attractive, let's say, or as important in trying to make such an investment?
Well, I think that's where everybody come in. That's where the community comes in. We had a meeting where we gave out some very important awards to businesses who were located in the Frenchtown years ago, and a lot of their families are still available, still around. It's a major the people in that community should have some say-so about what happens. And I think we can do the same thing in Frenchtown that they've done on Gaines Street. We can go ahead and get some studies going in there, redevelop what used to be in there on a more modern basis, of course.
Yeah.
You know, you keep the historic value at the same time you can develop. So that could be that whole area down there could become the economic hub again for the toll community, not particularly just the black community, because people do shop, people do go into restaurants, people do get their haircuts. So why not make that area as economically feasible or as economically important as any other part of the community? And I think that can be done. And I just think we're going to have to put a lot of effort on to make sure it happens.
Folks, we have taken as much time as we can from this young man. He's got a lot of folks to take care of. Reverend Ernest Farrell has been our guest this morning, Tallahassee Urban League president, CEO, pastor at St. Mary Primitive Baptist Church. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So there you have it, my friend, a conversation with Reverend Ernest Farrell from back in 2016. And from our archives, celebrating 10 years of broadcast history in the making. You stay with me. We've got more coming up after the top of the hour. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Widen Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. When you call Widen Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Widen's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Widen Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. Widen Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.
Hi, I'm Tom Flanagan. You're listening to Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Welcome back. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny is here for you every week because we love to tell you more about the things we find inspiring and informative, encouraging, uplifting, curious, sometimes motivating. You know, get out there and do something. Man, there's a lot to do this time of year. Weather has been stunningly ideal for, I don't know, whatever, right? Anything outdoors. Get in your kayak or grab your soccer ball or put your sneaks on your footsies and just go. Just get out there because, you know, this is God's gift. We need a little gifting, don't we? We need a little time for us to enjoy one another, and hopefully your Thanksgiving time was enjoyable with family and friends and all. Or if it was just you and your bird. I mean, hey, and I don't mean the turkey. I'm talking about maybe, you know, your cockatiel or something. But whatever, you know that we are here for you with as much goodness as we can stuff. Boy, I got all kind of turkey references going on. Into 2 hours every week, and you'll find us at moosemagnificat.com, our favorite radio station. 9 o'clock Saturday mornings on Moose, Tallahassee's streaming radio station to the world, bringing all local musicians their original music all the time. That is Moose Magnificat. And a very worthwhile effort it is, and we have found so many artists looking for those kinds of opportunities. But to gather them all under one heading, one banner, and to say this is the sound of Tallahassee, this is part of who we are. And I'm convinced that if we don't really know who we are, and I mean collectively as well as individually, if we don't discover better what makes us special, unique, what identifies us on a world stage and among ourselves, when we think of ourselves sort of retro or introspectively, when we think of who we are as neighbors and friends and churches and businesses, organizations of various kinds, when we come together in that sense of collective, what does that mean? What does that feel like? You know, for many years, you were relegated to working your 9-to-5, sometimes your 10-hour-a-day work shift, and the rest of it was a football team, and let's see, maybe a few local restaurants. These days, it's a little bit more diverse than that, and it's a little bit more engaging than that. And so you've got things like, you know, the daddy-daughter dance that's coming up. We always make it a point to make sure that that's included in our mentions as we go through this part of the year. It's somewhere here in my pile of stuff. I have notice of the daddy-daughter dance. It's a benefit. Here it is. The Notary, Northside Notary Group is responsible for this, and it's a fundraiser for them. But it's also more than that. It's really an affirmation of the whole, you know, paternal daughter sort of relationship and family and all that good stuff. So 17th annual Daddy-Daughter Dance coming back, hosted by Tallahassee Northside Rotary. Pretty cool. Got some major sponsors involved there. This is going to be in February, so they're giving you plenty of notice, but they always like to do that. They'll send us all the press info in December so we can make sure we include it in our list of stuff. They'll be at the moon, which is a cool thing. And let's see, there's an early dance for dads with younger daughters from 5 to 7. And then the older daughters and their fathers will be there from 7 to 9:30. And tickets go anywhere from, you know, 25 up to $40. So that's a cool thing. Community-wide charity event open to fathers or father figures and daughters of all ages. The Daddy-Daughter Dance coming up in February. Also coming up, we're getting post-Christmas notices here. Sunday, January 30 will be the next concert presented by the Tallahassee Community Chorus. And this one has been subtitled Repair the Future with a guest conductor, Jeffrey Redding, who is with the FAMU Concert Choir. So Florida A&M is going to join up with Tallahassee Community Chorus, and they're going to do all kinds of very inspiring music. It'll be great. That's coming up January 30, Ruby Diamond Concert Hall there. And that's, let's see, the 30th, on at 4 p.m. as their customary thing. It's a Sunday afternoon, January 30, 4 p.m. You can go online to get tickets for that event. tcchorus.org is the web address. What else have I got for you? Getting through all my announcements here, folks. Bear with me. Sign up now to plant trees with Tallahassee, Leon County, in the city of. So this is cool. You volunteer to plant trees this coming Arbor Day. And Arbor Day happens again in January, January 22nd. But they're getting this to you now because you need to kind of go and sign up and decide, you know, where you're going to do this and all. How do you do that? Well, let's see here. You go to tlh200trees.com. It's a good place. Volunteerleon.org/Arbor Day. You're making note of all this, I hope. Because I'm only saying it when this one time, okay? No, I'm just kidding. talgov.com/adopt-a-tree. City is proud to have been named a tree city. No kidding. In the United States of America for nearly three decades, in the Adopt-a-Tree program plants around 300 trees each year for free for local homeowners. So if you want a tree in your yard, Well, they'll do that for you. But you got to let them know, so that I've given you these web addresses. I'll give you one more time. VolunteerLeon.org/ArborDay or TLH200trees.com. How about that? What else we got here? Leon County has launched a new downtown heritage trail. Now, this was originally scheduled for the 6th of November. It was delayed, I think, because of inclement weather and so forth. It is scheduled now for the 11th of December, which will be next Saturday, the 11th. Is that right? 7 and 4 is 11. Right, good. So in December, Leon County government will launch the new Downtown Heritage Trail, a tour showcasing 13 historically significant sites in downtown Tallahassee. Again, folks, us getting to know who we are, well, that includes knowing what we've come from. How did we begin? What characterizes those first, you know, couple of hundred years? Well, this is a good way for you to get in touch with that, this guided tour, Downtown Heritage Trail. So that's coming up December the 11th at 11 a.m. So stay tuned for more details on that. I have J.R. Harding coming up in this hour, so you want to stay with me for this archived conversation from 2016. You stay with me. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Josh, and this is an ad for Supersigns. We were going to do an ad that was funny or maybe really dramatic, you know, something clever, but that just didn't work. So I'm just going to tell you, Supersigns is great. I mean, they're really great. And it's not just me saying it. Lots of people posting and talking to their friends. Here's one. We are so happy with all our signs and banners by Supersigns. Highly recommend. Here's another. These guys are awesome. They run their business with great quality and service. Our lighted sign looks fantastic. I can't rave enough. Supersigns does the really big stuff, like outdoor lighted signs, vehicle wraps, wall murals, and all the banners, the yard signs, and indoor signs, too. So for your business or your birthday party, Supersigns is your sign company. So that's it. That's our ad. Supersigns is great. I mean, really, really, really great. You should call them, 422-1883, or go to their website, yoursupersigns.com. How's that for clever?
Good morning, friends. This is your friend, Dr. Benjamin Franklin. We're talking with Brian Cerny on Tallahassee Talks.
The Americans with Disabilities Act prohibits discrimination against people with disabilities in employment, transportation, public accommodation, communications, and governmental activities. The ADA also establishes requirements for telecommunications relay services. The Department of Labor's Office of Disability Employment Policy provides publications and other technical assistance on the basic requirements of the ADA. It does not enforce any part of the law. It was signed into law now 26 years ago on July 26, 1990. It has, for those with disabilities, been probably the most significant piece of legislation at a national level to have occurred to date. And yet the needs of those with disabilities, special needs, all of them who find themselves challenged by those kinds of limitations that are part of the natural environment that we create require advocacy. They continue to find themselves challenged, and it's fortunate they have a fairly able advocate working very diligently on their behalf, and he is our guest this morning. J.R. Harding is here, who is an author, a speaker, an advocate, author of several books. He serves on the board, several boards, and we're going to find out all about his latest happenings. How are you, sir? Good to have you with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Brian, and thank you for inviting me.
You look spiffy, too. I love the red cardigan with, you know, you just look sporty. It's that kind of thing, you know.
Guys loud like you. And proud and be confident.
And I love
right?
the wheels, man.
Right.
I mean, you don't have to take second to anybody. You're rolling down the street with that piece of gear. You're looking pretty nice there. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the things you've been doing lately. And I noticed, too, from your newsletter, 10 years ago, August 12th, 2016 was your anniversary. You had the privilege of marrying, you said, your friend Erica Richards.
Right.
So you guys celebrated your 10th.
Oh, we did. Well, it's
on the 12th.
August 12th is just around the corner.
Yeah, nearly 15 years, she says.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
And we did cheat a little bit where we did a 10-day cruise for 10 years.
Ah.
Right, which was really spectacular.
So you've done that, okay.
All right, down in the Caribbean. And then, of course, because it was a shared activity, I had to, step up and give her a little something that shines in the sunlight and shimmers and fulfills the woman's need to demonstrate being loved and appreciated.
There you go. So this is a celebration of 10 years of marital bliss with dear Erica.
I think, Brian, this is a great story, especially as we age, because as you know, I've been in a wheelchair for 33 years,
right?
And twice having the spinal cord injuries,
right?
All I saw in the rehabs, besides learning to get well and how to use your broken body and a wheelchair and what accommodations you would need, was I saw the family nucleus rip apart. Male or female, it did not matter, but they did not agree. This was not part of the plan.
Yeah.
And in Erica's credibility, her exceptional love, her capacity to see beyond, she went into this marriage with eyes wide open.
Yeah.
Simply wanted to love and be loved.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just the gift that just keeps giving.
In that regard, too, oftentimes, it seems to me, we find ourselves faced with circumstances, we'll say, that push us away from that sort of unconditional giving and loving. And when you look at the current scene, whether it's a presidential election or the way in which offices are being accused of mishandling the folks that they're responsible for, either at a local or a federal level. You know, the question of selflessness, the question of giving without looking for what you get in return, that seems to be sort of on the wane, doesn't it?
Well, and that's a sad part of, I think, the global world. But one of the reasons I live here in this community, because I find our community to be exceptionally generous, very willing to take a moment. And I think it happens every single day if you're paying attention, if you ask, receive, and give.
Right.
But I think that might be a neat segue into my own experience with Donald Trump.
Yeah, there's been a lot of furor around his campaign, and of course, with the Republicans holding court this week. We've seen a lot of that drama being played out, just as we would have expected from a campaign that has been known for creating drama and intrigue and controversy. Tell us your Donald Trump story. I guess we're all going to end up with a Donald Trump story at some point.
And maybe, right. Mine was January 20th, 1989.
Hmm.
And for those with it in politics, January 20th is the inauguration.
Yeah.
And I managed to get a hold of some tickets through a friend of mine who was going to law school up in D.C. And we had a chance to go to the biggest party of the USA and Bush 41's inauguration.
Yeah.
Well, of course we're going. Well, we showed up there and we had to stay an hour or so out because it's so expensive and college kids at 20 years of age can't handle the big bills, right? So we drove in at 7 in the morning with the weather just awful and, full disclosure, hungover like we should be at 20. And we go up to the Secret Service to take our place at the Capitol steps. And we show our tickets that we are really proud of. And they say, no, you got the wrong ticket.
Uh-oh.
They say, your ticket is for tonight.
Uh-oh.
And the fancy balls, your ticket is not for the office, you know, the office.
Yeah.
Right. And there we are, just crushed. You know, we even tried to use the disability, right? This was before we had
pointing at the wheelchair.
Right,
come
right,
on,
right,
pal,
right,
give me
right.
A break here.
Exactly,
yeah.
And no, this was before. No, not with Secret Service.
Man,
they just
no sympathy.
Right, they discarded us like, you know, McDonald's trash, and we were about 20 yards down the sidewalk with our heads down, heading back to the hotel. And we hear, "Excuse me, young man. Excuse me."
Yeah.
And we turn, and it's Donald Trump coming just off the hot bucket of The Art of the Deal, looking slick. He was probably on the Playboy cover that year. Right. So, of course, we knew who he was.
Right.
And he leans down and says, "Young man, I think this will fix your problem." Uh-huh. And hands my group six VIP tickets.
Wow.
To the swearing in. And he said, "Turn back around and go have some fun."
Wow.
And celebrate America. And to this day, I always remember that, because that ticket is framed with my other inauguration ticket, which is on the wall, which began my involvement in politics.
Interesting.
In 1989.
Clearly, you have one of the most unique Donald Trump stories I've heard to date. That may rank up there as number one. Folks, we have not only some great stories about the current presidential nominee from the Republican Party, but the very famous J.R. Harding, who is here to help us better appreciate all the impact that ADA has brought, along with the work that he's doing currently. Stay with me. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny. We'll be right back.
Every day, Sellers makes life a little better for homeowners, helping them find the best design ideas for their homes with the best quality tile, carpet, and hardwood flooring. Even mosaics and ceramic and vinyl solutions are right there at their fingertips. Professional designers and seasoned advisors are ready with expert guidance to be certain they find the best solutions for their home. And best of all, Sellers works hard to bring the lowest prices and the highest quality products all in one location. That saves homeowners time and money. Maybe it's time for you to find the Sellers advantage for your home or your office. See for yourself this week at Sellers' spacious showroom, conveniently located on Capitol Circle Northeast, just north of Mahan Drive. Or find them online at sellerstile.com. Style, quality, and design at Sellers in Tallahassee. 656-8453.
Bringing you whatever Tallahassee is talking about this week. Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
So we're hearing about some interesting stories of the presidential experiences of J.R. Harding, who is our guest this morning, having come to have this rather spontaneous meeting with then Donald Trump, who I'm sure was far, far away from ever considering a bid for the presidency, and yet he reached out to you in this act of kindness and gave you six tickets. That's a remarkable story. You know, when you think about how oftentimes in everyday life, let's say the rest of us who maybe aren't as fortunate enough to reach into our pocket and solve a problem like that, there's ways we can be a part of helping you bring further the impact of ADA. And that's some of the thing I want to get into, because I know that you're on the front lines with that.
All right. Well, thank you, Brian. I think that bodes well with 26 years.
Yeah.
And you mentioned earlier, the ADA is the last set of civil rights passed in America.
Yeah, yeah.
And people forget that.
Right.
Right. It was born out of the 1964 civil rights and was puzzled together with little baby steps. And in 1990, we had the courage to kind of wrap it together and really make a stamp that said living with a disability is a natural part of life, and those man-made barriers aren't going to be tolerated in our civil society, in our communities, in which the expectation of community involvement, giving, living, learning, working, and educating is opportunity for all. So from that standpoint, where would you like to go in terms of...
The question I have there, and it's really one that you can't answer, because I don't think anybody can answer this question, but I'm fascinated to hear your take on how it is that legislation can be enacted, a mark is made, a line is drawn in the sand, and we say, this is the standard, this is what we're going to live by. Then comes all of the compliance issues. So even in our studio here, I'm aware of the fact that we have certain items structurally, they're out of compliance. And yet somebody like you ends up having to deal with that non-compliance, you know, and you're a nice guy. And so, you know, you kind of just keep going.
Well, you roll with the punches, Brian. Yeah. And I think all of us have some non-compliance in our own individual OCD interpretations of the world.
Well, of course.
Right.
And at the same time, this spills over into all of these other civil rights issues. And we talk about the fact that among African Americans or any minority group, ethnically, racially, there are still those places and ways in which we seem to hide from or retreat from compliance with what has already been established. Right?
Well, and that's well said. And persons with disabilities, in fact, are the largest minority group in the world and the most inclusive minority group in the world. We are over a billion strong, and we're an equal opportunity group because we all have all ethnicities and all genders. Mm. Okay? And so I really feel some of those other challenges,
yep.
Let's say if you were Latin and disabled,
right?
Well, I can't ever be Latin, but I certainly feel the disability component.
Yeah.
And so my heart and my desire for corrective action is there. And I think that segues us into the continuous progress, because those standards, what do they mean?
Right.
How do we overcome? And that we're continually trying to clean up the kitchen, so to speak,
right.
To make it that we can achieve those benchmarks that we had laid out.
So that relates to this business of Down Syndrome Society and the ABLE Act. Is that what you're
pointing to? Absolutely, yeah. Right. For, well, the number one goal of the ADA was employment, okay? Employment was first. Well, you know, what a lot of people don't understand, though, is that persons with disabilities were penalized for saving money.
Wow.
$2,000 was the limit.
Wow.
So with Congressman Crenshaw and the Florida Down Syndrome's advocates, they created the ABLE Act. And Florida just implemented it this year with Senator Gardner's leadership and the governor's signature that allows people with disabilities, right? Not all, but anyone who acquired their injury before age 26 to earn up to $100,000 and have it in a bank account for all of those what ifs in life, right? The car tire, the air conditioning, the mortgage, the down payment, the investing in a business, personal care, whatever you need to spend it on, you can raise that money without having it costing you your benefits.
Wow.
Right. That is for the first time now people with disabilities can save money like anybody else.
Right.
And you wonder, well, why didn't that happen 26 years ago? Well, that's kind of the American way, where you... Every year is a new step.
Right.
We have to implement it one piece at a time.
Right.
Now, another neat part about that Florida Act is not only can the person with the disability save money, but now grandma, friends, families can also contribute to it, just like a 529 college plan for your kid or grandson.
Mm.
That's the same principle of the ABLE Act.
Right, and that then is... another indication of the kinds of things happening at a state level. There was this House Bill 7003. The governor signed that into law. Tell us about that.
Well, that was another component of this broader piece of, okay, now you can save money, right?
Yeah.
Well, if we're encouraging workforce diversity, doesn't that include persons with disabilities?
Sure. Yeah.
Well, now, for the first time, state government is being challenged to recruit and retain qualified people with disabilities.
Right.
They're going to give folks with disabilities those internships and that experience so you can go out in the private sector, so you can put that entrepreneurial hat on, so you can be a part of the new next gee whiz item.
Right. In fact, with that kind of access to the workforce in general, it sounds as though not only are we breaking through some of those physical barriers, we're breaking through the social barrier.
Right, the attitudinal barrier. Right. The big one, exactly.
Where do you find the pushback? Or how is it that, let's talk about employers that say, I don't know, why is it such a difficult thing for people to grasp?
Frankly, it's the lack of experience. Okay, while we are the largest minority population, 20%, the truth is most people still have not had meaningful and consistent interactions with persons with disabilities. Okay, that we're still evolving. And this next generation, Brian, is the exciting part for persons with disabilities, right? Because these kids, these young folks, have gone to school with everybody. Johnny is no longer at the special school. Johnny no longer uses the special bus. Johnny can come through the front door like everyone else. Johnny can use the bathroom in the locker room like everyone else. Right.
So it's the integration then of those who are faced with individual personal disabilities, special needs, not being categorized or separated from the general population. And we're doing that at a primary level. We're doing
right.
that among
exactly.
Children.
So we're really creating a whole cultural change, and many of these rules and regulations were the foundation of that
yeah.
cultural change.
So it really is a cultural thing, and it's generational. That's what you're saying.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so as these what I might call the old gray guys
yep.
begin to retire and are no longer
just be careful.
Right. Yes, I'm getting there too. As this next generation takes over in leadership,
yeah.
there's that expectation of inclusion that was never before.
Talking with disabilities advocate J.R. Harding, he's our guest this morning. You're in tune with Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
Hello, brothers and sisters in Radio Land. This is blues guitarist Jerry Thigpen. Don't you move, because this is Tallahassee Talks with Brian Cerny.
We're back talking with J.R. Harding, talking about disabilities as they impact everyday life, not only for those individuals who themselves are dealing with their own personal special needs or disabilities, but those in the workforce, those in everyday life. And so it's not one person or another, it's not one side or another, it's all of us then, right, having to contend with the fact that a significant number of people in our population are in this grouping and faced with whatever their particular needs may be. But what did you say earlier? They're the largest workforce in the country?
It's the largest minority population in the country and in the world. Okay, 57 million Americans, or 1 billion worldwide. And of that number, only 18.5% of Floridians with disabilities are working.
Right.
And so when you hear about this significant low unemployment numbers, 4.5, 4.1,
right.
you know, people are humming, right? Well, persons with disabilities are not able to compete.
Not so much. Yeah.
At an equal level with this employer, you say, selection group right now. Employers can be very picky, right? And so so the competitive field isn't as equal. And that's what part of what HB 7003 was about.
I see.
And in addition, it also creates a unique abilities recognition, Brian, for companies and businesses to be involved in the disability world, and for then those businesses to receive like a chamber sticker.
Incentives and rewards
Right. So then we know and our families know that you care. Maybe with your checkbook. Maybe you care because you volunteer in our community. Maybe you care because you hire persons with disabilities. And now, in turn, we have a choice to spend our money from an informed decision. So it's pretty significant.
Tell us about something you've got here, Risch Park. What is that?
Oh, it's my dream, my pet project. It's 98 acres on the Gulf of Mexico just for people with disabilities and their families.
Wow.
It's a barrier-free, natural, almost conservatory of the old school beach.
Oh.
Okay. And what's neat is there's
this?
Over by Cape San Blas, right in the middle. And so you get the Gulf of Mexico view and the St. Joe Bay, which are two distinct perspectives of old Florida.
We've
got almost 3 miles of elevated wheelchair-friendly boardwalk.
Man.
We have group cabins, family cabins, accessible swimming pool, fishing, and so much more that goes on there. It is just simply...
Who's doing this?
Well, it's owned by the state of Florida, and it's unique for its location, for its mission, and for its affordability. And so, like, for example, we've got FSU and the Order of the Odd Fellows.
Right.
They do a little scholarship for a couple families every year to take a vacation that they never could afford. Right, and be able to have fun with all their kids and autism and yelling and screaming and being able to run and get naked if that's what they want to.
That's
right,
cool.
And nobody cares.
That's cool. And you've talked here a little bit about the amount of money that has been allocated for Risch Park to the tune of about $1.5 million.
Well, that was this year's appropriation. Okay, so over the last 10 years, we've gotten almost $10 million, right? And we're slowly trying to make this what you might call the national benchmark of an economic engine that is self-sufficient and used year-round.
Right.
You know, we talk about the Olympics coming up,
Uh-huh.
And Paralympians.
Right.
You know what? Wouldn't it be cool if some of our swimmers or track and field people or our tennis users all with mobility challenges used it as a training location?
Sounds very good.
Right. The folks from Chicago or Wisconsin, they would come down and use it in January when self-respecting Floridians don't want to be on the beach.
Huh. Folks, he is the author of two books, one entitled Now What? And the other is the ADA Adventure. J.R. Harding, our guest this morning, notably, and not only an author, but a speaker and advocate on behalf of those with disabilities. We talked at the beginning of the segment here about your firsthand experience with Donald Trump years and years ago. It was a very pleasant experience. When you look forward now, on that national scene, you look at this presidential race, you look at all the discussions that are going on about everything from Islamic terrorism to Mexican-U.S. borders to civil rights issues and safety issues. What do you hear about disabilities issues?
Well, that's a great question, Brian, and the truth is, there has not been a shout out or a symbol from either party that uniquely speaks to the largest minority group in America, right? There hasn't been a specific, well, we're going to change the employment. We're going to fix that infrastructure. Right. We're going to have government be more accountable there. None of this has taken place. We haven't had any thoughts about, well, how you can be more self-sufficient, how you participate in our visions. So and it's hard because I think sometimes people are scared, Brian. Mm. They're afraid to mention it. It's kind of like talking about seniors and Medicare and Medicaid, mm-hmm. and we're kind of a part of some of that discussion. Mm-hmm. But we need to have the courage to get past the fact that you're scared. Mm-hmm. And we need to be a part of that national agenda, that national vision, and those early bullet points, because otherwise we continue to do mm-hmm. such little baby steps at a time. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise we're not going to achieve that goal of self-sufficiency to the highest level possible.
Wow. The anniversary of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, July 26th, is coming up next week. J.R. Harding, our guest this morning, as we look forward to that observance, and we look forward to the continuing work of this very able man who brings not only his heart, but his amazing intellect, in my experience with him, and his devotion, his passion. J.R., thanks for being our guest.
Thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, that's what I've got for you this week, my friend. Thanks for being with me for the entire broadcast. For those of you who enjoy it so much, we're glad that you're a part of it. We are the production of Spatterwork Media and Entertainment, coming to you from the studios of Moose Magnificat right here in Tallahassee, bringing you all local musicians playing their original songs all the time. That is the sound of Tallahassee on Moose Magnificat. Carl Cerny is our executive producer. I'll be looking for you again next week. So come on, Tallahassee, come talk to me.
Witten Glass takes care of Tallahassee business. Local contractors know Witten Glass has been taking care of business since 1945. They prefer Witten Glass because of their precise window glass replacement, masterful shower enclosures, and storefront glass. Witten Glass will take care of you to your complete satisfaction. That's been Witten's way of doing business for 65 years. When you call Witten Glass, you're dealing with experienced, reliable professionals who offer only the best. Like Witten's top-of-the-line bath enclosures that provide style and luxury at an affordable price. Eye-catching storefronts are a specialty at Witten Glass. We'll help you design it and install it. We've done hundreds of storefronts in the Tallahassee area. That's why Witten is known for taking care of business. Witten Glass, the first name in glass replacement. Call 222-5781.